So we have the continuing conversation about wanting, yearning, desiring, and love. And we've been talking about love without calling it that, mostly the last 2 days. So we'll continue that, but first want to check if there's anything else to say, share, add, ask. Said maybe I'll throw in the notion that the grass is always greener on the other side. Fitting.
Can I add something to when you talk about the, or not really add, kind of ask with the yearning, wanting, and desire, and like cravings?
Okay. Anything else? Cool. Not too soon to say. As long as we remember now, it's like we're on a 2-day retreat. That we're just beginning a 2-day retreat. Okay, thank you.
I just like 5 minutes ago had this insight based on something you said to me earlier. It's like maybe the sense or the desire for safety is not necessary when we don't feel separate. Because safety is protecting me, or the impetus towards safety, the need for it, only arises when there's something separate to be protected.
And also, following through from there, when we're more in touch with belonging or a quiet space that allows something to come out of nowhere, then the movements of protection of life and honoring or moving towards shifting into what's sustaining naturally happen. So, because it could sound like then we're just going to be exposed until we get taken to pieces. Which is sort of the fear that if I don't do it, nobody will.
Yeah, on that, I've just been getting, like, just this afternoon, I was like, oh my God, I don't have to do it. Like, okay, I'm present in there, like, enjoy it, you know, explore it, which is fun and nice. And then when I realized that, like another level of just release. Like, oh my God, there's another way to say it.
Yeah, when there comes the sort of dropping in to what we could think of as a more subtle place or connection, it is more subtle, and we haven't practiced, and the drifting away happens more easily for that reason, and also because it tends to be kind of like the further we go into matter, the smaller we get, the more power might be released, like the nuclear bomb being more powerful than the atomic bomb. We get more subtle, we get more in a, you know, we are, but we're present with the experience of being more in touch. And it's more subtle and more powerful. And so the freak out, it's a freak out zone at first too. Which is not a bad thing, because it's a process of integrating our direct experience, our actual experience, meanwhile the body learning to accommodate that much wattage, voltage. And I want to also just come back to your discovery today of so the soothing is bringing us back into touch. So what we mean by safety is the coming back into touch. And I think that it could be interesting to just play with the possibility that when we feel shaky and we are looking for safety, it could sometimes be based on, or maybe is it based on, experiences where we were hurt and there wasn't someone to resonate with us, like, it's okay to, it's terrible and it's okay. It's terrible and you didn't lose your human dignity. So in the, was it the earthquake in San Francisco, maybe? Not the more recent, not the 80, whatever it was, 7, 6, but the earlier in the 20th century one. there was the observation that the communities that had community didn't get traumatized, which was a lot more of the immigrant communities than the mainstream culture, because they had a sense of having each other. And so it gives maybe some encouragement that because bad things do happen, and that doesn't seem to be completely in our control to stop bad things from happening, the possibility that even when bad things happen, it's just really helpful to have each other. And that thing of not needing to do much, if anything, other than be present. And so just reflecting on times, can you hear okay? Yeah, okay. That you needed, that you were shaken. And what was it? Sometimes that person who wasn't trying to fix you and who wasn't buying into, like, oh my God, you're broken forever, this is so bad, and wasn't saying, you'll be all right. Shake it off. But maybe more like, here we are, and what do we need here? If anything. So, remind me, I saw your hand, but maybe we'll just jump back to the craving question briefly. And I just to start with about this question, craving, and including these just really big questions that, in a way, like, it depends how you define it, what it means. Desire, like, well, choose your definition, and that's what it means, you know. So, but with craving, I think it's interesting to just think of different experiences of craving, where sometimes there's the craving that's because that's what I need, or the body needs, or the community needs, or the world needs, or whatever. And sometimes it's the opposite. In Ayurvedic it's not just medicine, healing, knowledge. In India, they have a phrase for that paradoxical craving. And actually, a friend of mine who lives not far from here is my, it makes me laugh even to think about it. She has the, her formation, her character is really fiery. And in Ayurveda, they would understand fermented foods as being heating. So something that's fermented is heat would heat the system. And she had just retired from being a Waldorf kindergarten teacher after living like decades in India and giving birth twice in a village in the middle of nowhere there. And then she retired and she was like, okay, the new chapter of my life, what am I going to do? And she was like, oh, I'm so excited. I have this great idea of starting my own new business of fermented foods. And then sort of the next day she had an appointment with an Ayurvedic guy, knowledgeable guy, and found that according to Ayurveda, she was completely, pitta is what it's called, completely fiery. And the last thing she needed to do was have even say the word fermented, according to them. And that's, so the two things are things that can happen to us. I think it's worth feeling how easily unsettled we can be, like just to really understand and accept that. It's not just you, it's not just me. But there's the way that we get, our world gets rocked in a different kind of way. So on retreat, it sometimes is really loud and clear. So I can remember times being on retreat where either me or someone else heard people laughing and was sure that they were laughing at me, or the person was like, I'm sure they were laughing at me, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, are you really sure? Because actually the world is like a big place and you're just one person. They were talking about something else, I think. Or just the, sometimes people have a something of a, like, keeping track of the pack. Like, is everybody here? And if everybody's not here, then something's like, where's everybody? Where's everybody? Like a sheepdog or something. And, you know, for a long, long time, what to do? Just noticing that, but really noticing that this is my part of a potential dynamic that I don't want to engage in. This is something that's getting triggered. And it's, or like these strings are getting plucked and it's not musical. And meanwhile, what else? And it's not my fault. And so I think when those sort of triggers are unattended, especially for a long time, we haven't found or attended to the giving enough sense of safety, that we're likely to experience cravings that are really believable. Also, as part of a process, and on retreat, this happens so far every time, that there'll be kind of waves. On this retreat, it's been pretty thick with waves of where things kind of come to a peak of intensity just before a breakthrough. Like, and that's when you're sure you've got to get out of here, or you've got to have some cheese or something, you know. It can, you know, it can come as a sense of craving or a sense of ill will, or a sense of restlessness, a sense of not having any energy, or a sense of doubt, but the unhelpful kind of doubt. Not the there's something wrong with the grass kind of doubt. So those are moments that are just almost predictable, except when we're in the middle of the process, it's so hard to recognize. Just like common sense are the ones we'll be like trying to prune and tame and herd, and the other ones are where we'll get like sneaky about like. Some kind of assuredness of being right. Give me any example of any craving. You can't think of any yet. Sorry. Okay.
And I think that is just, I don't know, the first thing that comes up is like my whole day, like my day of like being doing something that I love and then working with something that I believe in. I just at the end of the day, I want to come home and watch a romantic comedy like most nights a week.
Yeah.
And it's like what, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Great example. Could y'all hear? Yeah. Awesome. This is great because then we can really see how generalization would just be a weapon. So one thing that comes to my mind is like, what if like it were, I don't know, 100 years ago? And just then what are the options? Like just we think of now we have so many options, but actually let's just go back 100 years and feel like, what would you do at the end of that day or a day like that? Because what would you have, what would be the resources? But it's good to really give honor to that, the time where you still have a different perspective, and the craving might make sense in different ways that then can actually rock your world, like tectonic plate movement. Yeah. So what would you do if it were 100 years ago? Do you think? Like, anything pop into your mind? Yeah? Okay. This is something that I feel so... did you want to say... It looked like you didn't want to say it, right? Okay, good. That's what I thought. I saw people over here like, so just make sure I didn't misread you. I feel really lucky to have spent so much time off the grid, and also in India, which is kind of on the grid, sort of, you know, with like a nest of electrical wires like right outside the window, but it might not work. And there isn't hot water in like 17 rooms in the house or whatever. If there's hot water at all, it's like a whole thing. And people can have you know, a really good career and family life and health and whatever, what else would you, you know, knowledge, what else? Belonging, religious life. What else would we like?
Community.
Yeah, community.
Cushions.
They got good cushions. Handmade. And not have air conditioning in a much hotter, much, much hotter climate. Maybe not even have like a window in the window frame. Not have running water all the time. Like it's supposed to come like between 6 and 7 a.m. It may come, may not come. It may come full of sand. It's not drinkable. And so this is the grass is greener thing is related to this. We consider this development, I mean, here it truly is like a work of, like a masterpiece, this place. But we consider the way that we spend our wealth to be development without kind of really checking what kind of development. And I'll just pause for a second and come back to the love question and just feeling, sometimes having some really almost simplistic kind of guideline thought of like, am I coming from fear or am I coming from love? Or is it coming from fear? Is it coming from love? And so just at looking at culture also, so collective movements as well as individual. Is it coming from fear? Is it coming from love? Coming from other cultures here, I've had friends, girlfriends from other cultures that were more Latin, and one was from Chile, and we arrived in Atlanta, and she was like really confused, like where are all the people? And then she started to realize that what the deal is that people have big houses for their pets. Because they're at work all day. And that really is a description of the neighborhood. Like, not every neighborhood, but like the neighborhood that people think they want to live in. And not only that, but like, however big the house is, like the air conditioning is on. And, or the heating. Right? Maybe also like the automatic lights and radios going on and off so that someone who doesn't have that much doesn't think they could get in and take something. I'm not saying that we want them to, but it's kind of asking for that, isn't it? And so sometimes we would go somewhere where there were people during the day that wasn't an office building. Those few little oases of community.
Now in those places, no one's
right. So it's really tricky, and it's also, it's not in any way meant to be making someone feel guilty at all, but like, let's really like together like look at the cost to ourselves first. Because trying to look at the cost to other people is, I think, seems to be too hard. But it's just as easy to find the cost, and a little closer to home and easier to feel the cost to ourselves. Of convenience. So one example that I often muse on is the hot water thing. Because I really love a hot shower and I really love a hot bath. But I just, and so I keep, it's one that's good for me to come back to because it's not like, oh, those people who have hot showers, you know. It's like, oh, that's a hard one. And yet, having had many years where in India it was the bucket of cold water, and if you could sometimes heat it up if there were electricity with this thing that could kill you. And it was really like, Do you want to? And many times I did want to risk death by plugging in this huge immersion coil with Indian electricity being as it is in a metal bucket. Yes. Or sometimes, no, you know. And then it would be like the first cup of water is like so hard. Or actually, it's really before the first cup is the hard part. Then the first cup is just simply very cold. That's really all it is. And then the second cup is like, it's cold. And then it's kind of like, oh, yeah. Unless, you know, I'm feeling like I might be sick and then I need to do something else. But mostly, it's actually kind of great. But would I choose that if I had an easy choice between hot and cold? No. It's really hard. So what is the cost to myself when hot water is so easy? And I think I'm starting to get a feeling for one cost, like just only this year it's coming to me more, the feeling of just the sacredness of water. And missing the intimacy with that. And so not like a should or like, okay, I'm gonna get the sacredness of water by having a cold shower. But I'm just thinking about how much time it takes in my dad's house for the hot water to come to the shower, because the humongous hot water heater that's always on, you know, it's not like that in every country. The humongous hot water heater that's always on, whether they're on vacation for 2 weeks or whether they're home, is in the basement. And the guest room that I stay in is not on the ground floor, but the next floor. So it takes a really long time. And it takes that much water. Conventionally would be like, just wait, of course, you're waiting for the temperature to be right. How could you take a shower before it's ready? So that's one thing. And then there's where somebody else has the next thing. Or somebody else doesn't have what you have. And what that does to community. I was really struck by hearing a news story about a woman who hadn't had money to pay her water bill, and so the water had gotten turned off in her house. But she did have a neighbor who she could go to the neighbor and fill buckets of water and bring them to her house. But the problem was not actually really the supply of water, it was the shame of not having been able to pay the water bill and having to walk down the street to fill the bucket of water. And so just contraposing the time in India where in some places people are going to the hand pump and filling the bucket of water. And that's where they meet each other also, by the way, for better and worse. It's not like they're always like uplifting conversations. But it's not a shameful thing. It's like, oh good, there's water. And so I'm kind of wondering about maybe the delivery system of the water, where there could more really be some pause of feeling the intuition. Is it a craving that's coming from some animal intelligence towards cold water, warm water, hot water, a little water, a lot water? Or is it because actually for all my life I've only had hot showers and I couldn't take it? And then am I willing to slowly reawaken my body to what it might need, which sometimes might be cooler water than what I'm just assuming everybody does. Like waking up to water and temperature. In Ayurveda, everything is potentially medicine or poison. Everything. So water temperature would be one example. If our animal intelligence would be saying hot water is a poison, would we have a listening ear? So I'm sorry to bring this up, because I think it's really challenging not to feel obligation or shame or should or hopeless or whatever. But living off the grid in Spain for a long enough while that something really shifted. Because I've always been a nature lover, but living off the grid for a long enough while, something really shifted. So I just highly recommend. It's so much of a welcome. Instead of feeling human being as a kind of like carbuncle, like a disease on the planet, like really feeling how much we belong. And that we're allowed to have needs, and that we, just by being as we are, give so much. Despite our name and fame and personality and relationship quality or whatever. So just feeling how convenience can easily lead to dependence on convenience. And a lack of ability to listen. There could also be ways, if we're wanting it. So feeling that something's wrong about the grass in a different way, as a calling into, what is the potential here with technology and potential things that are called conveniences? Sometimes they give us more work, but sometimes they do save time. And then what do we do with that time that we've saved? Usually. And it's usually more work that's in more isolation and less satisfying. But feeling like something's wrong about the grass, and not like, oh no, I'll never be able to, or it's too big, or it's hopeless, or whatever. Or nothing. But the potential for developments to come from a different place, and therefore take a different form. So what we've been talking about the last 2 days, in a kind of sloppy, messy, abstract way that I'm sorry about, is this, and is love. And so it's like, whatever helps quiet down enough, so I'm just repeating the last 2 days again, whatever helps quiet down enough, which usually has something to do with coming inside our body, and if that's not a possibility, then we come in touch with the deep wish, or whatever, whatever helps be less distracted, less in habit energy, less in our programming. And hanging out there until this sort of magical shift happens. That might not be something we're even aware of. It might not feel magical. But something opens and creativity starts to pour through us. That great wind. Like, so we're just leaving space. It might feel like nothing's really happening. Everybody said retreat was going to be so intense, and it's just like, people get upset about everything. The next day it's so intense, and they're like, why can't I be calm and peaceful? Like, yesterday you were. And that's what allowed this storm to happen, which will bring another time of peace. So I think what we could watch out for also in regarding convenience, and in addition to letting the sacredness of just basic elements of our life, something like water that we would think of as, you know, we're supposed to use water, and then we're supposed to use it wisely, you know, like what about being in touch with water? But we do easily buy into, and usually in denial, the kind of one-upmanship and one-upwomanship of the conveniences and the status. And part of that is a sense of safety that I buy, that I'm glad for. And when I'm feeling kind of a little bit of victim-y or small, it's like, well, I don't know about anybody else, but I needed the safety, and okay. In the retreat that we had in North Carolina in July, we were in a community. This is a great, actually. It's not, it's a by the way that happens to fit in. It's a couple who have enough money that they have a house that's, or a flat that's bigger than what they need. Do you know the place?
No, I don't.
Check it out. It's in Durham. And so they open the big room and an extra little kitchen and a bathroom. And to us, they also opened their own bathroom and the whole house for communities to meet in a space of beauty. So that it's not just like, you don't have money, so, you know, take the basement or whatever. It's like, be in our home with our, the art that we love. It's a lot of folk art, especially, with these really comfortable things to sit on and a kitchen like full of teas or whatever to do your community think tank or whatever. And one of the kind of, in a way, art, a political statement. So there was the American flag, a reproduction of the American flag. And on it said something like, liberty for all. And then it said, offer not available in all places. Prices subject to change. So what we can feel the cost of in ourselves is when I, you know, half in denial or more, like, accept a feeling of safety plus superiority because I have the latest whatever, or whatever convenience it might be. And then the possibility of more freedom, where it's coming from, there are needs. Safety's good. And what's the specific, actual, unique, like, way that the needs can be taken care of now? That kind of providence, synchronicity. So what we've been talking about the last few days, the settling in some way. And again, you might be settled and feel so unsettled. It's not always something that you can be like, oh yeah, I'm really settled now. And more than that, as soon as the mind says, oh, I'm so settled now, is the beginning of getting distracted. Right? That one part of desire. But settling a little bit, there's some kind of falling in touch with something bigger. So call it big mind, call it God, call it spaciousness, call it the long tide, call it dynamic stillness. Source, emptiness. Any other favorite name? Awareness. Great mystery. Great wind. Anyone else? I think I better finish the sentence, like I've been kind of saying. I'm going to review what I did the last few days, and then yes.
Sorry, actually,
yeah.
It's so fine.
Okay. So what I was trying to say the last 2 days, there's the settling, there's some kind of shift. So we're in touch in some way with something bigger. So it might feel like belonging, it might feel like kind of grace or blessing, it might feel like emptiness, but not as a sense of isolation. It might feel then like, we leave space. We don't know what to do with it. Oh, we realize maybe I don't have to do anything with it. maybe it has something to do with me. And we become available to that in some way, which feels like resonating, or it feels like joy, pleasure in the body, inspiration, intuition. And the craniosacral language, it would be something that moves through us that could feel like streaming radiance. It could feel like intimacy with both a sense of we are unique and together. So not two, not one. It could feel like expansiveness. It could feel like brightness. And these are things you have experienced. And there will be times where you could hear this talk and be like, oh, well, I've never mind, because I've never had any. But you have. It's just a matter of language. Like, how do we cross the language gap? And I'm so sure that you have had these experiences because, and this is also what I've been trying to say the last couple of days, is that we're made from that. And so that's when I was saying it's kind of cute or funny that we're trying to figure it out. Or we're trying to track big mind, like small mind wants to track big mind. Which is fine, but it's cute. And so, like in the Sufi, in Rumi's poem about the Sufi who starts out by tracking the signs, the footprints. But 100 times better to follow the scent. So it's cute that this living being is trying to as if by my own individual power find out the answer to the mystery of the universe. When every, thought that I might have about how to go about that or how I'm doing and going about that, where does the energy for that thought to come about? Where does it come from? And by the way, what is a thought? What is it made of? And the way that great wind moves through the space that we leave by feeling like, I don't know what to do. That's leaving space for the great wind to move through is really specific to the actual situation now, like this step now. This step now might include a really good idea for something that's a 10-year plan. It's not only like the micro now is all that's being attended. The care is great and fine. And whenever protectiveness of life can come about, at all costs, it's not, sometimes people have this statement, I'm not the body, which I find hilarious because it's supposedly from a tradition called non-duality. It's saying, I am not the body. That sounds like duality to me, I know. And the idea of I'm not the body, and therefore who cares about the body, is so not the experiential flow. It's so much the ideology, having been heard but not tasted. In craniosacral, they seem to talk about, it's not that I know enough about craniosacral, but I found it interesting, more almost as a metaphor. They talk about the local field that's generated. So that means like, what now? What now? The intuition, the inspiration, now. What's the movement of love now? They say that local field is in spirals. The spiral that goes out and the spiral that goes in. So centripetal and centrifugal. Is that the right pronunciation? Centrifugal. So the spiral that would go out and out and out, and the spiral that go in and in and in. And I love that, just as a metaphor of the fine and the vast, the care and the details, that everything makes a difference. And a little tiny thing might be enough to make a big difference. Thank you. so be it, and hallelujah, to contribute, to be, to participate in. So, somehow, this is really my best definition of love. And again, the not to, not what. And I wanted to give also one of my favorite very short poems by Mechthild of Magdeburg. And the title of the poem is almost as long as the poem. The title is How God Comes to the Soul. How God Comes to the Soul. Which is already disorienting, I hope. Where we thought we had to come to God, right? We thought we were these dusty pilgrims on a long journey somewhere else. How God comes to the soul. And then the poem. I come to my love like dew to a flower. The dreamlike shiftiness of the eye that we thought was our problem. How God comes to the soul. I come to my love as dew to a flower. So there's so much to say about still all of these different words of craving, wanting, yearning, desiring, and loving. And I'm only now coming to your question of today. So what would you like to voice it still? And we'll see.
I would like to voice it, but I'm happy to do that tomorrow, if it makes more sense.
I would like to hear it now, and because okay. I love how things can kind of, people having, all of us having time to digest a little or percolate.
So this is not the question that I raised my hand for, which I will ask. But having now spoken about love, I wondered if you could maybe, like, quite specifically. Sorry. I was wondering if you could. If you could quite specifically parse it out. From desire, yearning.
Yeah.
The question that I was gonna ask today, you were talking yesterday, I think, about obligation and being kick-outable. And the thought that I was having was about how all of the kind of inner conscious, like all of the inner consciousness that you're talking about has social reference. It has points of reference in in interaction that we have with other people. So we obligate each other, and we do have responsibilities, and we hold each other accountable, and, you know, we sue and we shame each other, and not even necessarily so ugly, just like we might expect that, like, it's a parent's duty to care for their child or something.
Yeah.
Obligation as not only an internalized thing, obligation as an internalized shared reality.
Mm.
And similarly, in terms of the kick-outable, these are just two examples, but that, you know, we have all been excluded or watched people be excluded, and the reality of being fired or deported or exiled or excommunicated, etc., like all the different ways you could think of.
Ignored,
yeah. Of being kicked out, like they've all happened to us in our own experience, or what we've watched it
happen, or we've done it,
or we've done it. Yeah, right, right, including even to ourselves.
Yes.
So how to think about that kind of interface?
Mm-hmm.
How to think about the consciousness that you're trying to cultivate that with knowledge of this social reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just like I was saying before, that community isn't necessarily a plus always. So if we think of that simplistic guideline of is this coming from love, is this coming from fear? I think that when things come from and with love, the same material, the same situations, the same people, the same relationships could tend more towards freedom, including freedom from that sense of obligation, which is not a closing down on the ability to respond. And so the difference between obligation and responsibility. The example of being a parent is a great one. And as mothers, we can say, there's no need to put any duty in there because love has enough power and intelligence and sensitivity, you know, actually way more than if it was only because I had to do the right thing. You know, how many like days would we last? Because it's way too much to ask a human being to do. I mean, just even before the baby is born, let's just think about that. It's too much to ask. So love is enough, possibly. And love can call a friend on something and say, you know, that hurt when you ignored me. And we can learn how that communication can come more and more finely responsive to the wind of love. And then the community changes, the developments change. So in Buddhism, they talk about everything mutually kind of generating, everything sensitive to everything else, everything influencing everything else. And that can go in a really destructive way where aggression and pain repeat again and again and again and again. And that also can go in a way that sometimes people call transcendent, but it's that transcendent immanent. It's the both spirals. And so sometimes we'll be in a situation that seems like we're stuck. Like we needed to end that relationship and we're back in it. Or we needed to begin that relationship and we can't bring ourselves to. Or we need to say sorry or whatever. And we're just like, we're sure that there's no way. And then what to do? If there's really no way, if that's really our conviction that there's no way, then giving up. A really helpful hopelessness event happens. And that's a settling. We're giving up the I will, therefore I can. It's like, well, I can't. And then, oh. Maybe we get distracted from that problem that we're so stuck with, and something either dreamily comes to mind, and we're like, yeah, right. And that might be just such a good solution, or such a little way of a tiny trickle of shift or movement. Maybe not everything is now perfect from now on. But it is a little shift. This is different. And from here, there's different options. So in that phrase, inherent treatment plan, one thing that I think is missing and was funny to me in the way that I was searching, my search phrase of implicit or emergent best treatment, is that plan makes it sound like there's the one thing, the one way that it could work out. And that doesn't seem to be the way it is. It seems to be the shift into connection, into openness, receptivity, something bigger, and then something moves through. And it's not those kind of options that are paralyzing or contributing to greed, but it's contributing to going with the flow, getting unstuck. And then that has influence exponentially, is what it seems like. Or in a branching kind of way, we could say, like the mycelial network of the trees. Okay. To be continued. May there be peace on earth, in our hearts, and everywhere. Thank you for being here.